Para-X Radio, your source for everything paranormal and beyond.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and its guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X Radio Network, its affiliates, its sponsors, or Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. Paranormal Encounters podcast series is educational, entertaining, and intriguing. Be careful what you wish for.
Careful what you wish for. Ever get that feeling that something might be hanging around?
Good day, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series. The producer and host of this series is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. She will be joining you shortly. Before we meet Dr. Schutz, let me give you some background about her. She is a published author and academic, former legal investigator, and paranormal enthusiast, who holds 4 advanced degrees in the area of higher education and applied communications, with a secondary interest in parapsychology and life-after-death issues. Dr. Schutz travels to haunted locations all over the United States and Europe, seeking out situations to investigate. A sensitive intuitive, Dr. Schutz has had numerous experiences with the paranormal since the age of 9, with her most frightening and recent experience being an oval-shaped floor-length mirror cycling around in front of her in a haunted room she had stayed in. She has photographed apparitions in a screened window, been kicked up into the air, been sat on, choked, put into a trance, attacked, and continuously sought out by the unknown who want to share a message with her. From her personal experiences and in interviewing others, she has written nearly 100 illustrated stories in her book series entitled Paranormal Encounters. The Paranormal Encounters podcast series will initiate with Dr. Schutz first discussing a variety of interesting topics, as well as her personal experiences that will evolve into other segments for your interest, enjoyment, and education. Each podcast episode will be approximately 45 minutes long. Dr. Schutz welcomes your questions and comments. How to contact her or ways to order her books will be mentioned at the end of this podcast.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening to a special episode of Paranormal Encounters podcast series as published by Paranormal Universal Press, LLC. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the writer, the producer, and the host of this show. Tonight, we have a special guest with us, Mr. Buddy Thayer, who has experienced numerous encounters over the past several years with what most of us perceive to be paranormal. Buddy is an investigator and founder of Ocean State Paranormal, situated in Rhode Island, which began in 2012. This founding organization aids people in not only finding answers to their puzzling mysteries and experiences about the paranormal, but also validates their claims that what they are experiencing is indeed paranormal. Buddy is also the historian for the Ocean State Paranormal Team, providing fact or fiction research to clients' possible claims like whether a death had occurred on the property or whether the site sits on a Native American burial site. Buddy has a love and strong interest in history, which aids him in answering questions about situations, getting right down to fact or fiction. And Buddy also volunteers with historical organizations such as the Major General Nathaniel Greene Homestead and Blackstone Valley Cemetery Restoration Project in an effort to preserve the past. Before we begin our interview with Buddy, let me share with you once again that Maynard and Mildred, a comedy involving two young kids, has launched on Amazon as well as my website and can be purchased directly through Amazon or on my website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com. This dynamic duo has been waiting 2 years to make their big debut worldwide, putting together a combined illustrated book and an audio CD featuring 22 of their best segments ever, as heard on my show. Suitable for all ages, from the very young to the very old. Let's take a moment, shall we, to hear their promotion? Play that promotion, please.
Rude.
I'm Maynard.
And I'm Mildred. And we are
the Maynard and Mildred Show.
She's a ghost.
No, I'm not. You just can't see me. I'm invisible.
She gets me in trouble all the time.
I could follow you, Maynard, to the end of the universe.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Enjoy the show!
Back to our featured guest tonight. Well, Buddy, how fascinating. This will be a very, very interesting interview tonight because you are bringing to us a wide variety of paranormal perspectives and experiences. So, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Buddy, where might we be Skyping each other this evening from?
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. So, what is Rhode Island known for?
Our thick accents. We have a very Boston-like accent.
Oh, yes, I can tell already. Well, for those who are listening out there, no problem, probably. For the rest of us, so if I say what, whatever, just bear with me. And how's that weather out there in your neck of the woods? We got quite a snowstorm here the other day. What's your weather been like?
We've had quite a bit of storms throughout March, and it's kind of cold and windy today, just waiting for spring to arrive.
Yeah, I think most of us would agree we are waiting for better weather so we can get out and mow our lawns, you know, just what we want to do. So, well, I don't want to waste any time tonight because I've talked with Buddy earlier, and he's got a lot of interesting stuff to share. So why don't we just jump right into it? And I also don't want to forget about this, especially if we run out of time. So let's mention this now and at the end if we have a moment. Did you say you have one or two events coming up?
Yes, we actually have an event that will be occurring in Rhode Island. All four events will be occurring in Rhode Island. The first event being in June and the other three in October. Both are public events with an admission fee, or actually all of them are public events with an admission fee. The cost to participate at the public investigation in June will be $35. It's an 18-plus event. All our events are 18-plus events. In October, we'll be having a gallery reading with a local medium. That event will be $35 per person, and then we'll be holding special investigations later on in the evening with that said medium, and those will each be $100 per session.
Okay. What is your event called, buddy?
It's basically, well, the first event will be called the Public Investigation of the Barnum Memorial Armory. That's in June. That's on June 2nd. We still have tickets available. In October, the mediumship event will be called Validating the Afterlife with Roland Comtois. He's the local medium. And then Following the Energy is with Roland Comtois are the medium tours, the special tours, later that evening on October 27th.
Hmm. These sound really actually quite interesting. I wish I could hop a plane and head on out there. Did you say that these organizations help to do what? They take off some of the expense from some of the historical preservation?
Well, Barnum Memorial Armory is also hosts it. Amongst hosting its Continentals and its historical organization, they also host a museum, which houses a vast array of military artifacts, propaganda, uniforms from as early as the Revolutionary War to as recent as World War II. And all of its Rhode Island, all of its from Rhode Island was either made in Rhode Island or like worn by soldiers into battle in from Rhode Island. And now it's housed in this museum at Barnum Armory. And so the proceeds that we collect from these events are going to go towards helping them to preserve the history.
Oh, cool.
Which I think is important.
I think that's really cool. Good. Oh, that's really good. Well, at the end of the show, we'll just touch base if we have a minute back at these again just quickly so people will know how to get the tickets. And also, hopefully, you'll get a nice little crowd showing up because it sounds like it all goes to a worthy organization here. So, all right. So, let's begin. Let's see. So, buddy, I thought maybe it might be a good place to start with your telling us a little bit about your group called the Ocean State Paranormal.
Okay, certainly. Ocean State Paranormal is comprised of a multidisciplinary approach to best understand what one may be experiencing in their unexplained situations and to help best to solve the problem if one actually exists. Our approach is professional. We document anything we encounter, and we don't charge for any aspect of our service. Our services generally include research, on-site investigation, an in-depth review of potential evidence collected, presentation of evidence collected, mediums, religious blessings, further investigations if needed or wanted, and every fall we hold public library lectures where we share some of our evidence capture.
Wow, that's really cool. So how many are in your group?
Currently we have anywhere from 8 to 10 members active, maybe 5 or 6 active all the time.
Do they go out on these investigations as a team normally?
Yep.
They do?
Normally, yeah, there'll be about between 5 and 6 of us will go out to either residential cases or if it's a bigger case, if it's a more like a historical case or a bigger location, I'll have additional people come with us if they're available. I have a lot of part-time members who have families, have other obligations, so like if they happen to have a Friday night off and they want to come out, they'll come out and they'll investigate with us. But yeah, I generally have about a core of 5 or 6, generally 5 or 6 people that come with me all the time.
So do you always go on all of the investigations? Are you is that something that your main role is, that you're always there, or do you have somebody else there who would be like your backup, or do you split sometimes and some people are doing investigations somewhere else and you're doing them, or do you all just make it kind of a point to always just stick together as a team?
We generally, when I'll schedule the investigations when I'm talking to the client, when we're setting things up, and I'll try and schedule what's best for everybody, what works best for everybody involved, because ultimately we all have jobs, we all have families, we all have responsibilities that we got to tend to, and this is kind of like more or less a hobby more than anything, you know, it kind of falls in that category. So we kind of all got to schedule it around everybody, us, the client, everybody involved. Sometimes it's difficult, but we do it when it's best for everybody. So
cool.
In order to get the job done, you know.
Cool. Well, let's go back a little bit in time here, because just to give the audience a little bit. So Buddy and I had talked a little bit before the show, and there's always a number of things that are very, very fascinating. I could talk for hours on the paranormal, but why don't we go back in time with you, Buddy, and when did you first become interested in the paranormal?
Well, as a kid, I grew up watching shows like Unsolved Mysteries or In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, and I was always fascinated by the unexplained or the tales of the unexplained. I always wanted to know more, because I was always really fascinated with history. So the paranormal and history kind of went hand in hand. Not went hand in hand, but oftentimes in a lot of historical places, you find a lot of paranormal claims. So that's how I first kind of became interested in it. Later on, when I was a teen, I started going out to places like Mercy Brown. She's a local vampire legend here in Rhode Island. I go to her grave. I go to, like, other local vampire graves. I go to Lizzie Borden House. I go to the Ladd School, the former Ladd School. I go to different places looking, like, they call it legend tripping nowadays. I go legend tripping with friends, hoping to see something, hoping to experience something. Never really did. So I kind of, like, I was like, all right, it's cool. It's a cool thing. It's really interesting, but I don't have anything solid to say that, like, this is actually real. So I was always kind of, like, super skeptical of whether or not it was true. And that's kind of how I got into it.
All right, so what age did you start this at then?
Ocean State Paranormal? I started in 2012.
Now, let's go back. So that your group started in 2012. When were you actually, how old were you when you actually believed you had your first paranormal experience?
I would say I can give you August. It was August 12th. It was a Tuesday morning, 2008. I was working the overnight shift at Ogle Group Home. I was alone. I was by myself. I had five boys that were sleeping. It was about 4:30 in the morning. Now, for months, I'd have experiences where I thought I wasn't alone. I'd turn and I looked, there'd be no one there. I thought I'd see somebody. I'd turn and I looked, there'd be no one there. I'd go and I look. I thought I'd hear kids going up and down the stairs at like 3 o'clock in the morning. There'd be no one there. All the kids would be sleeping. So I would tell myself, buddy, you're imagining things. You're like hearing things. People told me ghost stories all the time from that house, and be like, oh, you're crazy. You think it's a ghost. It's not a ghost. It's just something else. It's not what it is. I tell myself anything and everything I could, because ultimately I was there by myself alone, and it was pretty dark, and it was kind of creepy. So that one morning, I was putting dishes away. I was getting ready for the morning routine, and each one of these boys in the bedroom, the bedroom that was behind me had three boys in the bedroom, so they had an alarm on each one of the beds. So when one of the boys got out of bed, the alarm went off. So it would alert the worker that one of the kids were out of bed. So I heard the alarm sign go off. I turn around. I see a figure coming out of the room. And as I turned around to greet the person coming out to see if they had to go to the bathroom or facilitate this kid's need, it wasn't a kid at all. It was about 5'6". Now, I'm about 6'4". So it came out to about my lower neck, the top of the head. It was a head, shoulders, walked right by me, and disappeared right in front of my eyes. I've never been so terrified in my entire life. I grabbed that countertop in fear and just stood there in shock over what I just saw.
So let me ask you something, because everyone's going to want to know this. Okay, yeah. So you see this apparition come toward you, walk by you. The first question people usually ask when they see something like this, if they see something like this and they have to do a double take, is how solid of the person's form were they, or were they more translucent? At first, did you think it was actually a human being, and then you realized that, you know, how solid was the visual form of this individual?
Well, when the entity started to come out into the room was dark that it was coming out of. The room that I was in was low light condition, so it wasn't the best light condition. So it kind of looked like a person. I assumed it was a person coming out of the room, because the bed alarm went off and the motion sensor went off that somebody was up, that they were moving. So I was looking at was shoulders, head, shoulders. As it walked out, I saw the strut of the body, but it was dark. It wasn't like, yeah, it was translucent, but it was like almost like, not like a shadow figure, because I don't really like associate it with that, but it was like, I think because it was dark in the room, what I saw looked like a shadow, but it was strutting, like it strutted right by me and then disappeared. Hmm. Or moved so fast that my eyes couldn't recognize it anymore.
Could you tell whether it was, you said earlier it was a boy's halfway.
It was a boys group home. Yeah,
group home. Yeah. So obviously when you saw this thing, of course your mind's thinking it's a boy, but when you think about that experience now, would you have been able, let's say you were in a situation where it was boys and girls or whatnot, would you have been able to recognize whether or not that was actually a boy or a girl that walked past you?
No, there was no distinguishing marks. There was no, it was like, and the figure was like within 3 inches, 4 inches of me. And there were no distinguishing marks, like I couldn't tell if they had long hair or not, or short hair, or they had a boy's face or girl's face, if it was male or female, for that matter. It was just a shadowy figure. It strutted, it moved, the shoulders moved, I guess you could say the legs moved. All I remember seeing is from like the chest up of this thing moving right, and as I turned and I stopped and watched it go right in front of my eyes, and I was absolutely terrified.
Yeah, I can honestly say that I have yet to have that close of an encounter with something. I think that if I would see something visually, now I've taken photographs of apparitions and screen window. I've got that in my book. Everyone's heard about that at least 5 million times.
Yep.
But the thing is that, and they're very defined and they're very clear. And you can tell exactly what and who they are almost. And that led me. And by the way, that was in 2007. There was a lot going on in 2007. I hear a lot of reports about that. I know you saw this in 2008, but you may have had... did you start working there in 2008, or had you already been there in 2007?
I had been there. I had been a per diem with the company from a year before, and I started the overnight position probably, I want to say, in like April of that year.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot going on that year. I don't exactly know if the earth moved or what, but it seemed to have shaken up a number of things, because that's all I hear people talking about sometimes. Yep. Is in the year of 2007, and it's like, yeah, that's exactly when I had my experiences too. And then, of course, from there, I went on and investigated practically every haunted building that I could put my fingers on, just to prove to myself that all of a sudden they were interested in meeting me or whatnot. Now, tell me, we're going to go back to that home in just a moment, but I want to move ahead and then we'll move back and forth on this. So ever since then, okay, now you're real interested in doing this. What's the most haunted place you have ever investigated for somebody?
All right. Well, it wasn't for somebody. The most haunted place, it was more for me. It was on my bucket list for years. I had been there when I was, like I said, I went legend tripping when I was a kid. We got permission. It was a closed down hospital. It was a closed down facility for mentally ill and developmentally disabled people in Rhode Island for in the 20th century. It ended up closing in the early 1990s, and it was abandoned for years. And after it was abandoned, there were numerous claims of people seeing apparitions and having paranormal experiences. So as naturally as kids, we try to get in there every chance we got, but the local police department really kept a good eye on the place because they were abandoned buildings and they were falling apart and people could really get hurt. So for years, I kind of like sent people letters. I'm like, you know, my paranormal group would like to get in there. We'll take all the responsibility, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, we can't do it. No, no one's in there. Nope, 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 nope. So I thought it was done. I thought it was over. Then in 2013, really good friend of mine worked for the state, told me that he could get me into the lad school, but it would be very limited. It could only be a few of us, and we could only go in for 30 to 40 minute sessions in each building that were we were at Axis Till, which were two buildings total, and but they were two really good buildings, and we couldn't leave the first floor because of the dilapidated building structure. So I'm like, all right, I have to take this opportunity. So we went there, we went to the lab school, we went in the infamous Fogarty Hospital, and I have more EVPs in a 20-minute EVP session of clear, like clear voices. They're intelligent. They sounded like they were standing right next to us, talking to us. Like, it just, like, absolutely blows my mind. And it was, I mean, I've been on a lot of investigations. We have a lot of cases that we've been on that are absolutely phenomenal. The Lad School was, for someone from Rhode Island, grew up hearing about the Lad School, like, being threatened by my parents, hey, if you're a bad boy, we're going to send you to the Lad School. And then, like, knowing the atrocities that took place there, because, like, there was a lot of abuse, there was a lot of neglect, and that's why they closed the place down. People died, and they kind of covered it up. They buried them out in the woods. So a lot of travesty over the years. So it was kind of like special for me, and the fact that, and we got so much evidence while we were there.
I'm gonna jump in here. Okay, so we're curious, of course. So can you share with us? So first of all, let's. I'm gonna break this down because, of course, people will be curious. What were you using? Just a typical tape recorder, a handheld tape recorder, to collect your EVPs?
Yeah, it's a digital Sony is the one I've been using forever. The people I was with were also had Sony. One I believe had an Olympus, but the digital recorders, all of them are like within $50. I think you can get them at Walmart. You can probably get them on Amazon, wherever you can shop. And you don't have to go crazy spending money. It's just, honestly, the one I got, the Sony that I have, is phenomenal. Of course, you can drop $1,500 and probably get the best of the best, but you don't really necessarily need that. I had that. I had a digital camera, and I had a K2 and a flashlight.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of what I bring. Now, I don't do a lot of EVP work, although I should, because I've got these things hanging around me all the time. So, of course, the question that the next person's going to ask me or ask you is, all right, so you've got your little digital recorder, you've got it on play or record mode, and you're out there trying to ask questions and give them enough time to respond and all that. So, okay, now that you've got that, how do you go about playing that back so that way people can actually hear something? Do you have a special software that you play it back on and then just intensify the sound, or how do you, what do you do?
Yeah. When I first got into this field, the people who showed me the ropes showed me WavePad Sound Editor, which you can go in, you can highlight, you see the whole frequency of the whole recording. So you have this thin line across the middle, of course, and that's zero frequency, that's nothing. And then you have, like, vertical and up and down
waves.
Spikes, waves, I guess you could say, of different sound levels. So, you know, after years of listening to different, like, recordings and whatnot, I can pick up, obviously, my own voice is loud. My voice is loud. People can hear me everywhere. But, I mean, I can hear, I can discern between, like, people upstairs or people in the same room, for that matter. You can kind of tell the difference with stuff like that. But, yeah, I play them through WavePad. I'll, like, clip a certain spot, like, within, say, 10 seconds. If there's a question that I ask that is answered in the EVP, then I'll include that. If there's nothing historical, if it's just something weird, I'll make it, like, a 10 to 15-second clip. I'll pull it out. If it's a little difficult to hear, I will amplify the sound a little bit. But I don't like to use too many filters because then it just sounds electronical and weird and ghosty and negative and Hollywood, and it goes down that, like, it makes it something that's not. Not what I'm trying to present.
So when you are looking at these waves, because like right now, for example, because this is a pre-recorded show, I'm actually watching, I have this program called Audacity, which I love Audacity. I guess maybe it's because I know how to use it. But so I'm watching your sound, my sound across the screen. So at what point would you know that you captured something in using this type of software and watching? Would you notice some kind of a spike or a bump or something that looks like it's a response to a question that you just asked?
You know, usually there's the spikes that, like, a ghost, for example, I guess a ghost, if you want to use that word, will produce is usually much smaller than mine, because mine is huge, because I have a bellowing and loud voice. But, like, an entity's voice, so what's coming through as an entity, it's usually much smaller. Sometimes you can barely see a bump there.
Yeah.
And you gotta really zoom in and highlight it, but then you play it and it's like, oh, it's like there's something really there. And then listen to it a few times and like, oh wow, it sounds like it's talking to us. And it's, sure enough, sometimes it is, and sometimes it's, you know, somebody's stomach on the other side of the room. That's why we have like multiple recorders throughout the area we're recording, and so we can kind of like collaborate with other recorders. If we hear a sound, yes, it could be a voice, but it could be like this guy's stomach over here, which on recorder the 4 or recorder D, it comes through much clearer than it would on recorder A.
Right.
You know?
So. Right. What are some of the EVPs you've captured? Now, when these ghosts are, most people, their only familiarity with how many words a ghost might say is when they're watching some of these television shows and they're trying to play them back and they're very few words. What have been some of the most common or some of the most interesting EVPs you've captured? Can you share a couple of those?
Yeah, I could. I have like a greatest hits list of EVPs throughout the years that I've compiled of cases that I've been on.
Cool.
And one of the first ones that I captured that absolutely blew my mind. We were on a case in Woonsocket, Rhode Island. The home was built by a Civil War captain. The captain was of the Rhode Island 1st Cavalry, Battery B, I believe, or maybe D, I'm not sure. But anyway, we were talking about, it was myself and another woman, and we were talking about items that a Civil War cavalryman would have carried into battle. So like flintlock, pistol, bayonet, cavalry sword. And there's a gentleman's voice that comes through, and it's my voice, you can hear my voice now, and another woman's voice, she's probably in her 30s, and this man's voice sounds like he's probably in his late 60s or early 70s, as I did that. And it's so clear, and it's so creepy. That's awesome because it validates history for me. It connects the past to the present in that sense that this guy is like still kind of hanging around.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question on that, because I know some people, just exactly what you said right there, some people are going to challenge me on that one. So okay. How do you know that they're hanging around, or how do you know that it's not actually a residual voice that's been embedded into the air or whatnot, into our universe?
Yeah.
How can you tell that it's an intelligent response versus a residual response? And let me remind everyone, a residual is like a playback. So nobody's really there per se. It's a playback of something that happened in time. It could have been something traumatic or whatnot. And it just embeds itself. And when the perfect conditions arise, all of a sudden you've got this EVP or this voice or something that you actually hear. So how do you know that it's intelligent versus residual?
Honestly, if I have continued responses from the same voice, sometimes you can almost tell it's the same person talking to you. If it's more intelligent than that, like if you asked for, this guy's name was Albert Smith, if I asked for Captain Smith and it's like, hey, I'm here, or hello, I've gotten hello, I've asked for spirits and gotten hello. That's another common response is hello. Or another common response, believe it or not, and it creeps me out every time I hear it, is my own name, Buddy. I hear Buddy very frequently come through.
Yeah, that would actually bother me a little bit because, you know, they can see you, but you can't see them.
Exactly. Creeps me out a little bit.
Yeah.
But everybody around me thinks it's the coolest thing ever, and they want to hear their name. Why are you always hearing your name? I don't know. I'm not asking to be, but it's really cool that they're saying my name, because right there, that's validation that it's probably not a radio wave. It's probably not something residual. I just want to say it's something like in the room with me, because I don't know. It's my name. You know?
So let's add to that a second for an extra question. So they say your name. Was your name said just by somebody's voice to you just before you hear that? Because let's say you go into a place and let's say no one speaks each other's names at all. Let's just okay. So and then all of a sudden Buddy comes out. Okay, so is the apparition mocking your name because it had heard it from someone else so they say it, or is it the fact that no one has said your name at all in any respect and then it just says your name? What have you had, both situations or just one where you...
I've actually had the situation. I was in a case in Johnston, Rhode Island, and this case was it was another group home. It was a group home, the company I had worked for a while. My mother still works there. She's worked for the company for 20 years. And it's an old home I'm not going to say the word. It's on a major highway in Johnston. The home was owned by a state senator. So it was a big, beautiful home. No expense spared. You know, beautiful tiles, beautiful woodwork, everything. So I had been in this house probably 1,000 times before I investigated, before they called us and say, hey, look, everybody's experiencing weird stuff here. You know people who is experiencing weird stuff here. Why don't you come in and investigate? We finally came in, went in there and investigated. So I was in there plenty of times. We didn't really mention my name at all. We were walking around doing our thing, and we heard it. We got it on the EVP. It's a whisper, and it says, Buddy. I didn't see Buddy at first. And then we were using an Avilius that night, and on the Avilius around the same time, we got Buddy on the Avilius.
Hmm.
I don't know if it's related. I don't know if it validates anything, but
yeah, I just find it interesting because sometimes we don't know what we're dealing with sometimes when they say that. And here's another thing: how do you know that? Let's go back momentarily to the group home that you're in. And, of course, one thing I want to just remind everybody for the 100th time, and I think Buddy's trying to remind people too, and he's brought this up a couple times, do not trespass on other people's properties. Every property out there has an owner, even if it's the government or whatnot, and you do need permission because some of these places are so dangerous, and not necessarily in the respect of the apparition ghost hunting thing, but because they're decaying and they're falling to pieces, and that can actually cause more harm than running into a ghost. But you should always not trespass as a thrill seeker and do this properly if you're going to do this at all. Let's go back to your group home or maybe even another situation, and sometimes this gets brought up. So let's just hypothetically say you're in the group home. What was the age of the boys there that you had to deal with? What were they?
Four to 13.
Wow, 4 years old to 13. That's really young. Okay, so let's say hypothetically you hear what sounds like a really young apparition. That's a boy. Of course, everybody, you can't always trust the fact that if you hear a little girl's voice or if you hear a little boy's voice or whatnot, that it is actually a boy or a girl. Sometimes, of course, demonic energies can disguise themselves into children. So that way, of course, we get vulnerable with, of course, the elderly and children, because we feel a lot of sympathy towards them, or we understand they're a little more pure at heart than a mature being. And so how do you trust the fact that when you're capturing things, that it is as you are capturing it, a young boy, maybe we can now bring in a young girl? Or how do you know that it's not demonic disguised as such?
Honestly, I really don't. I've had children come through, or what I think is children's voices. I've had different toys, use different toys, use a ball. I've seen the ball move a few times. But I don't have anything that tells me it's a child, or it's a demon pretending it's a child, or it's something else. Or not that I go a lot on feeling, but if I'm not feeling the vibe, if I'm feeling kind of a nasty vibe, I probably won't press the issue as hard, because if it's something like that, I don't want to be involved with that.
Well, a lot of times too, those types of entities, especially if they're demonic, they can break down our vulnerabilities within us, and that's what they want to do. That's why they disguise themselves sometimes as a little girl, little boy, and whatnot. Even the photograph that I shot in the screen window, and I believe it to be my great great aunt and my great great grandfather. She looks just exactly like a family member. I hate to say it, and he looks exactly like what he could have looked like when he was a little bit younger. And sometimes they'll appear a lot younger than what, of course, than what they died at. And I don't know. I guess there is some theory on. There's multiple theories on why sometimes apparitions will show themselves to be younger than when they passed away or tragically died or whatnot. And I don't know. There's just multiple. One theory is that they're showing themselves as in a moment or a place where they used to be perhaps feeling the best or most happiest or whatnot. But anyway, so let's talk about an uneasy experience. Were you ever in a situation before where you were scared on an investigation, or maybe you were running into a demonic energy? Anything like that?
Yes. Now, this is like right after we first got started. Maybe we were doing this about a year. It was just a couple of us just kind of like trying to explore our own experiences and try and help empower other people. That's basically what we were trying to do in the beginning, and learn a little bit more about things. So we were at a conference, and we met a medium there, and she was cool and everything. We talked to her, and she's like, "Oh, if I ever get any clients, I'll refer them to you." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sure." So a couple weeks later, I got a referral from her. She's like, "I got this woman. She's having really intense experiences at her house. She's feeling like she's being almost sexually abused at times. She needs somebody to go in there and investigate." I'm like, "All right, well, it sounds pretty intense, but I'll check it out." So we went in and we did the on-site investigation, and we had some really strange experiences that I didn't feel entirely comfortable with. So I brought in a medium, and the medium got scratched. And the medium got scratched after they told me there were demonic entities there. And at the time, I was like, "Yeah, I'm a very show me kind of guy, especially in this field. I'm not gonna really put 100% faith into anything unless I'm really seeing it or I'm really experiencing it. People could tell me that like there's ghosts everywhere, or they're experiencing this, or they're experiencing that. And I can give them validation to a certain point, but I can't 100% believe anything." Until I see it. So I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, they're like saying, "Oh, we see demons." Like, yeah, I'm thinking to myself, okay, whatever. And this woman let out a scream, and we turned around, and I was like, "You all right?" And she lifted up her shirt, and she had these three huge red claw marks on her back. I couldn't tell you where they came from to this day. I don't know. There was nothing she bumped into. There's nothing she rubbed up against. I was a little scared at that point. We left. I brought in a demonologist. He came in and he did a house blessing. It was a very almost a Catholic rite, so I was almost kind of used to it. The client, because I was raised Catholic, the client was Catholic, so she was for it. It was a very strange experience. There was a lot of temperature differences that I couldn't explain. There was a lot of, we all had this kind of weird back pain, this back sensation during one of the blessings. I heard a lot of, I can only describe it as like, it sounded like 1,000 whispers, like all at once, like in the room we were in, we were blessing. A lot of things I couldn't at all explain. And when I went back on audio and I listened to some of the stuff we captured, I was absolutely terrified. I'm like, I don't want to, I'm a ghost guy, absolutely. I love this field. I love investigating the unknown, the ghost part of it. But the demonic part makes me very uneasy, and I don't really have any interest. But I do, we do network with a few groups that are into that. So if we do experience anything that we feel is a little bit beyond our level of experience, I send it forward to them. But yeah, that's that experience itself. We kind of learned from it. Was very surreal, you know. It's like before that, I thought it was just like kind of like maybe people were like being delusional, maybe people were having psychosomatic, or maybe they were just imagining it. I don't know what I thought, but I didn't think it was anything what I experienced.
So would you call yourself a sensitive?
You know, I never have. I have had mediums tell me that I am, and I don't like put a lot of stock into it because I don't necessarily see or hear anything, but I do have weird feelings and sensations that I can attribute to certain experiences. Like, for example, if I'm on a case and we're investigating and I have that weird experience and I take a picture, sometimes I get something. Or sometimes if I have that weird experience and I ask a question, sometimes there'll be an answer. I don't know if it's my body just telling me that there's a presence near me, or if it's me that's actually special, I guess you could say. I wouldn't call myself special. I wouldn't.
Well, maybe you're just tapping into your, what I call your frequency or your internal radar a little bit better as you do this more and more. When I started doing this more and more, now, granted, I started feeling things at the age of 9, probably felt them before then, but discounted them as whatever. But at the age of 9 and going from there, and then, of course, then when I captured the apparitions of my relatives in the window, then I had my own natural curiosity, but I wasn't thinking at the time that I was sensitive or anything at that point. Before, maybe yes, but after, no. But it was when I started going into some of these very haunted, known haunted places that I could actually start, my body would feel the energy in the room or feel it around me. And some cases it was, to me, terrifying when I first started out. Other times it was just kind of, you know, like for me, I get real nauseous. I feel dizzy. I feel disoriented sometimes. And sometimes I can even tell when they're taking possession of my body or coming in, because it's a more suffocating feeling inside. And it's a very weird, odd feeling. And I can vouch for that on occasion too. But since you do a lot of investigations, as you become more in tune with your body and in tune with your surroundings, you can almost pick up something that others cannot pick up. Have you ever walked through an electromagnetic field before?
Yeah, I guess I could say I have. I mean, like the poor wiring, the stuff that bleeds, the alarm clocks, the heavy, never direct EMF field. No, I can't say that I have, but I know what you're understanding. I understand what you're saying. Almost like your body recognizes the change in the atmosphere.
Right.
It's the best way to describe it.
Right. But when I was in a haunted B&B over in, I believe it was Scotland, it was a couple of years ago, probably the most terrifying place I had ever investigated in my life, because I walked through an electromagnetic field, and so did the gal leading us to the room, and it was almost like being hit and slammed right in the face with I don't know, this frequency that I can't describe. And both she and I actually went pure red in the face, and the other ones, my husband and the other woman, were just kind of walking naturally, but she and I were like little radars. And that was also the place that in the evening time, that whole room felt sick to me, the one we stayed in. And of course, when my husband threw the holy water just before I went to bed, what I'll never, ever, ever, ever forget in my entire life is the cycling mirror that just all of a sudden it shook itself at me as if it was going na 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 na, and then it started cycling around right in front of me. And that was call. So some people would say, is that demonic or what is that? I don't know if it was demonic. I couldn't go to sleep that whole night. I just sat there with a black mask over my face, begging that the thing would not hurt me. My husband is sound asleep. Not that he wasn't fearful of anything in there, but I was absolutely picking up everything. And so, of course, I've got that. That's all in my book and documented. But it is, and I caught a number of orbs in there that were real. There's a difference between dust orbs and these orbs and that orbs, but these orbs were definitely part of that entity in some way. And so, yeah, I just find it real interesting. Like, I use my, you mentioned a K2 meter. My K2 meter, and I know when my K2 meter talks to me, it speaks to me. I know when I have a direct hit, or I know when I have I'm picking up like electrical something. You know, you after a while, you know the difference on your yep. equipment, you know, and stuff. Let me see here. I want to ask another question here of you. I think before you talked about multidisciplinary approach, since we're talking about approaches. So what kind of multidisciplinary approach do you use, and explain that to the listeners?
Okay, well, as we know that a lot of these phenomena can also be experienced in if you're having a psychological issue. So I have she's a clinical social worker. She has many years of experience of dealing with those suffering from traumatic events or abuse, neglect, whatnot, and all the issues that it causes the person. She's also pretty adept in other mental health issues. So if somebody's experiencing voices, it's good to have somebody like that along with you to determine if it's paranormal or if it's in fact in their own head. You know, if they're actually experiencing a delusion or if they're actually experiencing something paranormal. I also have an expert in energy, and he's good to have along because, I mean, the K2 is all well and good, but he's a little bit more of a K2. He's able to tell me, you know, what kind of wires, what kind of fuses are good or not good for that matter, and what kind of energy they might be giving off, and what range, you know, given on the amount of power that's running through certain wires, what range of EMF might be running off these bad wires, how it might be affecting somebody. So it's good to have somebody like that to kind of validate EMF, whether it's natural or unnatural. I also have a guy with us that he's an expert, and not that he's really an expert in the field, but ITC equipment. So like the spirit box, for example, he's pretty good at. He uses pretty well different equipment in the field, K2, different motion sensors and whatnot. He's pretty much the expert in everything that's involved with that. As far as I'm concerned, I can barely turn the computer on. Anything tech-related, I have these tech guys that are with me that set everything up and put everything together. Other than that, me, myself, I'm a history guy. I have another guy with us who's he's a curator, actually, at the Barnum Armory. He's investigates with us, and he's a historian, so it's good to have that perspective. Myself, I do a lot of the research, so it helps to have that bit of a background to want to go through some of the most mundane facts about a person or about a place that you could find, or try to dig up such mundane facts. It's good to have that experience at a collegiate level.
Yeah, I think that that's really important too, because if you're going into a place and you're just if you don't know much about the history regarding it, some of the types of evidence that one could collect might be misinterpreted, misconstrued, may not fit what is actually or could be happening, or what might still be remaining at that property or whatnot. So I think that your ability to know the history of the place and the fact that you love that really aids in a lot of these investigations probably pretty well. Do you think that there are any fields out there of study that might actually benefit from the investigative efforts of the paranormal field?
I say science because science is, it's wonderful because everything's kind of like cut and dry. And not everything in the paranormal is cut and dry. You can't always have the same experiment with the same entity or the same location or a different location with a different entity and run the same experiment and expect your results to be exactly the same. Or even run the same paranormal experiment in the same location and expect the same results every single time. You just don't. So in that aspect, maybe, I don't know, this is, I wouldn't really consider paranormal investigating a science, but maybe help to advance that itself, you know.
And I'm going to jump in on here for a second. So do you believe in full moons, new moons, and that sometimes you get better evidence with those happening, or do you find
absolutely.
That it doesn't? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Full moons especially.
Full
yeah.
moons, yes. And new moons I've had, and blood moons. I'm a very big believer that when the energy fields are the most strongest and this stuff is, if it's meant to happen or maybe the conditions are right, usually on those days things are really happening. And of course people have to also realize too that there is such a thing called ley lines. And ley lines are like electromagnetic fields that you can't even see. Sometimes they go directly right through your house. And so things are jumping and all that sort of thing. And you think, oh my God, it's paranormal, when it could actually be just the energy field tapping into that energy line and creating or causing things to actually move. So it's very fascinating, but I agree with you 100% that not always will you get the same results, because I have never been able to repeat, at least for the places I've been, under even similar conditions. I can't get always like the apparitions that showed in the screen window. Okay, show now, you know, not on the same day or this or that. There was a recipe that day or the night before that actually caused them. It was limestone foundation, lightning strike that hit the property, tree falls over, bad storm, et cetera, et cetera. And that was just a recipe to light them up like Christmas. So there you have it. So now that we're running, and I could probably talk to you for 3 more hours, but we're running out of time here. So, buddy, do you have a website that you can share with people for the Ocean State Paranormal that they can go get additional information from if they need to, and what is that?
Okay, so the website is still currently under construction. However, we operate through Facebook. So if you go into Facebook, look up Ocean State Paranormal, you'll find our page. You can like us. You can look at, we have all of our audio clips are actually under the video section. You go into video, and I'll show various clips from various different investigations of what we believe to be paranormal.
Okay, thank you. So that they just type in Ocean State Paranormal, right?
Yep,
okay.
That's it.
All right, good. Let's see. Any final words you might want to share about your thoughts, buddy, on any of this?
It's scary. It's scary for me. It's still scary for me sometimes. I go into a place and I'm by myself, or I'm somewhere by myself, and I suddenly feel that feeling like I'm not by my, that I'm not alone, that somebody else is in the room with me. You got to empower yourself. You got to tell whoever it is to leave me alone. Don't, this is my house. Get out of my house. This is my house. You can't be in my house. This is my space. You can't be in my space. Don't be disrespectful. That's one of our biggest guidelines, is we respect the living and we respect the dead if they're there, or if they're not, for that matter. But we're not going to disrespect them at all. So that's all I can say.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
Ouija boards.
Ouija boards. Stay away from them too. You know, some people love them, and my hat is off to you on that. But you're not going to find me encouraging anyone to play with them. And so on that note, I just want to thank you, buddy, for taking the time to speak with us tonight on this program, because a lot of people will really engage in listening and thinking about some of the things that you had to say. And you and I both can agree that the paranormal field is a very mysterious field, and that there's many of us who would like to uncover some secret behind it, and that's why many of us are running after it, because we're still trying to uncover some secret, you know, about it, and trying to understand, most importantly, what's happening to us around us. But so thank you for being my guest tonight, buddy.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me.
And for everybody else, please, as always, continue to listen in, and we thank you for being our listeners this evening. And this will conclude our interview for this evening. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or Para-X Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, Para-X Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.